The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve?
Uh-huh.
Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Tuesday, 26th day of February, 2013. The Dow is up 64 points. The S&P is flat. Comp is down 7. Gold looks to be up about $28.90. Crude is off 69 cents a barrel. We're going to go to Michael straight away. He was texting me there as I did the intro. So that's always... Hey, Michael. I'm right here. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Michael. Hello? He texted me he wanted to do the recap first. Hey, you got to be here to do the recap, Michael. Is this thing on? Michael? Okay, we'll just wait for him to show up. No, anyway. Okay,
guys. Here I am.
No. Oops. Your window of opportunity's passed.
Hey now. Okay, I just got your text back. Sorry.
I was
logging in. All right. You want me to just grab the charts?
Tear it up.
All right. Here we go. There's a ton of opportunity today. All right. So everybody should be looking at our charts. Good.
Yep.
All right, let me move that over there. grab this and move this over here. Just have to position things. It's going to be orderly. All right, here we go. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, February 26, 2013. Ton of opportunity today. But before I get into that, let's go over the results. We had plus 38 ticks on gold, plus 4 ticks on the Russell, plus 5 ticks on the Euro, plus 9 ticks on crude oil, for a total of plus $582.50 per contract. Took us 10 trades to do that. We made our 2 points this morning in 3 trades in 24 minutes. Okay, that's what it took. So I got to put all that in the spreadsheet, and I will get around to that in just a minute. Hang on. Let me just do this. What did I say? 582.50 plus 28.90. So we are now at 34.72.50, $3,472.50 per contract on the month. We're inching up on that $4,000 mark. Hopefully we'll get there by the end of the day Thursday, the end of the live trading room. But we'll see. What do we need? We need 530 bucks between now and the end of the live trading room on Thursday. All right, if you have not taken the free trial with us, guys, go to www.cfrn, like Nancy.net, /apply, sign up for the free trial. In the free trial, you get access to all the charts that you see here, all the indicators that you see here. You get to sit in our live trading room for 2 hours per day for 5 business days. In the live trading room, you'll see me put trades on, take trades off, tell you when trades are setting up. I miss a bunch of the trades in the live trading room. I miss a ton of the trades in the live trading room. You know, I did pretty well this morning, but I should have done better. Just based on the number of trades that were available, there was a ton that was available today. Anyway, you know, it was a pretty good day, and I think most folks had a pretty good day today. I'm not going to say that everybody did, but most folks did. Let's see. Let's just start out, and I'll start going over the trades. Okay, I'll start out with crude oil. On the crude oil, we traded crude more than anything else today to end up with the results that we got on crude. That's because we had a losing trade on crude. Where the heck was it? There it was, right there. All right, our first trade on crude was right here. Okay, we made a little bit of profit on that. I'll show you the pictures, and then I'll just show you how they were applied. Now, the same thing, this is a crude chart from a couple months ago now, but it's a crude chart. Okay, maybe not a couple months ago. It was the G on crude, and we're now trading the J on crude. So it was last month or the month before, something like that. Anyway, the same thing applies to every single market that we're going to look at. We're probably going to look at 4 or 5 markets right now to go over all these trades. Okay, so what we look for here is the bullish cross of the MA1, which is the blue and red line. See this blue and red line right here? We look for the bullish cross of that over the BBC, which is the green line. That gives us direction. Then we look for price to pull away from the green line and back down to the BBC. Okay. When it pulls back down to the BBC, we look down here to see if we have divergence on the slingshot. Divergence on the slingshot all by itself. Not divergence between price and the slingshot. On the slingshot, we want to see the green line and the blue line diverge. Okay, that's what we want to see. Now, if we get that, and we get an up close on this bar, that's where you look to enter, on the up close. All right, that's it. That's all there is to it. That's the trade. That's the trade off the BBC. All right, over here on the short side, you look for the bearish cross. That is the MA1 crossing below the BBC. Price to come back up and test the BBC and give a down close. You look for the bearish divergence. In this case, whenever you're trading off the BBC, you want the cycle to be the right color. All right, the cycle to be Well, in this case, the same color as the bar. Blue for the long trades, red for the short trades. All right. That's it. That's all there is to it. In this trade right here, we had the bullish cross. The space in between was step two. The pullback and test of the BBC was step three. Step four, bullish divergence, blue cycle, get long on the up close. We did. We took profit. All right. That's all there is to it. That is the trade off the BBC. Now, that's not the only trade there is, but using the same exact set of indicators, there are a number of times, and I can just point them out in here, there's a number of times where there's so much momentum in the market that price doesn't actually pull all the way back down to the BBC. In those cases, you have to draw a trend line down the tops like this, okay? And you look for an up close on the other side of the trend line if you're going long. Look for the up close on the other side of the trend line. And check to see that you still have divergence. Because what you anticipate when you have divergence like this, down here on the slingshot, is that the green line is going to work its way up into the cycle. All right, green line up into the cycle. That's what you anticipate. So, that said, let me bring up another picture for you. Here it is. And there's two occasions when the trend lines come into play. One is when price has so much momentum that it doesn't pull all the way back to test the BBC. And the other is when, like over here, when the cycle is the wrong color. Like right here, the cycle is blue on the down close. Or the cycle is blue on the down close off the BBC. So you got to wait for the down close below the trend line. All right. That's it. That's all there is to it. So right here, there was a long trade we took. Took some profit there. We got break even on this one. Let's see. Price was moving around quite a bit in here. We missed a bunch of trades in here on the crude oil. Now, when we got long over here, I had said when it breaks out of this box, look for it to get up to 93.21. It got up to within a tick of 93.21 right here. Then it had a pretty deep pullback, and then it went shooting right up through 93.21. It stopped up here, turned around, and started coming back down. There were a bunch of opportunities in here that I haven't highlighted, because I was plenty busy trading other markets. You can see on the way down here, I got short right in here. The yellow arrows are trades that I actually took. The ellipses that you see on here are trades that set up that I didn't take. All right, the yellow arrows right here, I traded the short right here. I ended up taking a break even on that. You can see that kept going down anyway. In here, I went long. This was a test of the BBC with an up close with bullish divergence and a blue cycle. I went long and it stopped me out. I think that had put me down. Yeah, that did put me down on the crude oil right there. All right, I got it back right over here. All right, I got it back there, and there was another trade that I had taken right in here. I took this one right in here for a little bit of gain. This one put me back to positive, and this one added a little bit more on it. Now, right in here, this was the close above the trend line with the bullish divergence. Okay, price moved away, but it had so much momentum that it didn't pull all the way back to the BBC. Closed up above the trend line. I know I was showing stuff at the time, and I dragged this chart over when this was happening. I dragged this chart over, and I said, there's an entry right there, and I put it back, and I put the order on, and I ended up getting filled on the order after all, and I showed everybody that in the live trading room. Let's see, then we had a bearish cross. There was an opportunity to short right here. You see the bearish cross, test of the BBC, the down close, bearish divergence, short right there, down it went. Another one right here, down it went. Over here, the black line got up above, so there was no trade in there. I had drawn the trend line up waiting for it to give us the opportunity, but it didn't give us the opportunity until over here. Okay, and by that time, the black line was above the green, so there was no trade. If you did take it, it still worked, but no trade for me. There was another opportunity right in here, and this was sort of wrapping up the morning session, okay? Right in there. After the morning session ended, there was a bunch more opportunity right in here. I watched this whole thing collapse right here. I was on the phone, and I watched all that happen. So there was a ton of opportunity there. We ended plus 9 on crude. Is that what we had? Yeah, plus 9 on crude, okay? On the Russell, let's go back to the Russell now. I believe we took just the one trade on the Russell today. Yeah, just the one trade, it looks like. I pointed this one out. This was a good learning teaching moment or learning experience. I'll leave that alone for right now. As the day started out, it was really choppy back and forth across the BBC. Finally, it got down here. If you shorted right here on this down close, there was no divergence down here when it closed down. So that was kind of a risky trade to take. By the time it came up here and hit the BBC, the trend line was over here. There was blue on the cycle, so the close below the trend line was there. That dropped down about five or six ticks. Before it turned around and came up here, there was an opportunity here on the long side, again here on the long side. And up here is where I finally took a trade for a four-tick gain, I believe. All right. It turned around. Price completely turned around right here and gave an opportunity to short in here and another opportunity in here. I tried to short this one, but I didn't fill. And then I was showing everyone over here how I thought. If we got a down close below this line, you see how I drew a big, thick red line there. If we got a down close below that line, how I thought that we would see a significant move down. And significant it was. There are a couple of other opportunities on the way down to short the Russell during that move. One was right here. Okay. Then it changed directions, and there were opportunities on the way back up. Right in here was one. All right. I didn't draw the trend line on there, but you can just eyeball the trend line. There it is. The up close above the trend line with the bullish divergence. Okay. Over here, changed directions again and was moving down. And again, right in here, moving down again. Okay. The same thing over and over and over and over and over. It just, you know, on days like today where there's a ton of activity, I managed to take, you know, the equivalent of, well, what was it, $582, almost the equivalent of 12 points out of the market. And that was, what, 11 and a half points, roughly, ES points out of the market. But there's so much opportunity. And, you know, when I'm going through the live trading room and I'm showing everybody the trades as they set up and I'm jumping from market to market to market, I end up missing a bunch of trades. But that was it. I took one trade there on one trade on the Russell for plus four ticks. Okay, right there at the top. Let's see, gold. We did pretty well on gold this morning, but that was because we got into one trade, one particular trade that went for 20 ticks. We had, you know, I mean, just look at the opportunity in here. Just look at this opportunity. Now, gold moved around really fast a lot today. So, in hindsight, when you're looking at this, you have to look down here to see how many bars there were in a single minute. You know, sometimes, I mean, this was perfect in here, but it may have been moving so fast that you couldn't have done it. Okay. We did do what we could do with the gold. We started out, well, hang on. It started out in here, gave a shorting opportunity right here was the first one, went for a few ticks, turned around, changed directions. There was a long opportunity in here. Then we were looking for an opportunity on the long side that didn't happen. Oops, that didn't happen. It gave an opportunity to short right there. Turned around and changed directions again. We didn't have any divergence. It was just going back and forth across the BBC here up until the high-impact news events came out. And Bernanke started talking, or somebody started talking. And the market started to move. Gold, you know, gold had a huge move up today, and then it tanked pretty well. And then it started moving back up after it tanked, okay? Now, you see in here where it was moving really fast. This whole span that you see here is only 14 minutes, okay? There was one opportunity here on the long side. There were a bunch of opportunities to trade in here on the short side, but it was moving really fast. So it was hard. It was hard to get those trades on, honestly. In here where you see I had highlighted some areas in here, we didn't have any divergence on this one, so I should take that off. If I blow it up just a little bit, the next spot where we did actually have divergence, if I just take this trend line right here, if I take that trend line and I move it up like that, the next spot where we actually did have divergence was right there. So right there was the spot to get long on that. All right. It was moving around quickly. We finally had divergence again here where it tested the BBC and gave an up close. You could have gotten in there. I did actually get long over here on the up close above the trend line. We took some profit there. I got long over here on this one. This was, I took 20 ticks profit on this move up. That was a big move up right there where, you know, and it moved quickly. I had more than one opportunity to take 20 ticks. It actually moved up here, and I realized I had 20 ticks profit, even better than that, and I missed it, and then I put a target up at 20 ticks when it pulled back right here. I had dragged my stop up to about right here and put a target up at 20 ticks, and it took me out at 20 ticks profit right there. You can see it kept moving up, but we lost our divergence down here. Then we had bearish divergence, so the price, you know, the cycle needed to reset. All right, it didn't reset until right over here, and there was, again, a ton of opportunity. And once we got in here, I said, if we have, you know, we break out of this box, we get a nice up close above this box, or close anyway with this box, we should see significant movement. We finally got an up close above the box right here, but we didn't have any divergence to support the trade. Okay, so we weren't able to get into it. Another box scenario over here, but it went all the way over here like that. Now look at, this is 1050 right here, and this is 1051. So all these bars were in that 1 minute. I know it seems like this is a lot of time right here, but it's not. The next the next opportunities came right over here. And right in there we had bullish divergence for the move up. Okay. I wasn't placing any trades in there. I'm just showing you what was happening as the market was going. I said it's just going too fast for me to try to explain trades and place trades all at the same time. There was an opportunity there, an opportunity there, an opportunity here, and there, and there, and there, all on the long side and short side on this one. But, you know, when you get the divergence, everything is the same from market to market to market to market. It's all the same. If you go back to those... those pictures that I said right at the beginning of this recap, you know, you'll see it's the same thing. Regardless of what market it is, it's the same thing over and over and over. Now, there's a good question. My perfect exit without a target is, well, I trail my stop, okay? When price is running, what you anticipate, like right over here, or even right over here, you know, I'll show you the trade right here, okay? Go back to the pictures. You'll see it came down, tested the BBC, and gave an up close. So right here on this up close is where you're long. You're anticipating that the green line, this green line right here is when the trade was, is going to work its way up into the cycle. All right, it pulled back a little bit to your break-even point, and it worked its way up into the cycle. Now, when it gets up to the cycle like this, that's when you start thinking about an exit. All right, I know that was right here on this move up, but that's when you start thinking about an exit, okay? The gain on that, 1608.8 to, right up here, 1609.9. That was just 11 ticks on that one. But you start thinking about an exit. That doesn't mean exit. That means trail your stop up close. So if you're trailing your stop up close, like behind the black step line right here, no, it went all the way up to 1611.3. So 1608.8, 1611.3, that's 15 ticks. Is that right? 11.3. 25 ticks. Sorry. Let me just... 8.8, 9.8, 10.8. Yeah, 25 ticks. And it did it again right here. All right. The entry on this one was the up close right there. Again, looking for the green line to get up into the cycle. When the green line gets into the cycle, that's when you anticipate that it's going to pull back and give you another opportunity. All right. So you just manually trail the stop up. And this right here, this is gold. It's $10 a tick. $10 a tick on gold. Okay. We finally started to trade it again over here. It was pretty close to the end of the morning session. We got short in there and we got short in here. Okay. And there were more opportunities. And after the morning session ended, there were even more opportunities in here. I mean, up and down and up and down and up and down. It's just, it was exhausting, really. It was. I mean, it's exciting, but it's exhausting. Does DT have the ability to trail a stop automatically? Yes, it does. I wouldn't do it. Not on an indicator, though. Not that I know of. Not on an indicator. You can have it trail, you know, you can have it step up four ticks every time it moves up four ticks. And that's basically what the indicator does. But it was a lot of trading. There was a ton of opportunity. A ton of opportunity. All right. Now, I know for the people who were in the live trading room for the first time today, it was probably overwhelming because there was just so much going on all the time. All right, that was gold. I didn't trade anything on the NQ, but, you know, as usual, there were a ton of opportunities on the NQ. If there's a ton of opportunity everywhere else, you can almost times that by two on the NQ. You know, like right here. On the way up, there are a ton of opportunities up here. On the way down, I mean, just looking at this, I don't know if you guys are there yet, but just looking at this, I can eyeball the trend lines. And you just see the trend lines, you see the price pulling back, and you look for the divergence. That's it. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's not real hard. Once you get used to everything, it's pretty straightforward. Okay? You just have to, you know, spend the time in front of the screen using our proprietary indicators. And it's right there for you. Even the ES. The ES had some good activity this morning. We pointed out a few spots on the ES. I know there was one fellow who said, do you guys ever look at the ES? Because we hadn't been looking at the ES. I said right in here I wasn't going to go long. Yes, it does. I said in here I wasn't going to go long into the weekly trading zones, and I didn't. And we waited and waited and waited, and there was an opportunity to short right here on the other side when it started to pull down. Could have shorted right there. You could have entered it again right there or right there. Either one of those. This was the first spot. There was a second spot here that I highlighted in the live trading room. It hit it again here, but we didn't have any divergence. Okay. The up close right in here was another spot to get long. That was at 90.75. That one went up a point and a half. It turned around and started going down. You know, I wasn't really focused on it over here, but right here. Nope, you would have needed the down close. So right there would have been the entry on that one. That would have been at 86.5. It drew down to 88.5. So you probably would have stopped out right there with a 2-point stop. Okay? But you know what? You get right back in the game. Here's another one right here. No. Right there, 85. That dropped down to 82.75 for 2.25 points. Changed directions and gave you another one right here. We're outside of the morning session now on the ES, but this was 86.5, and it's still going. Okay, that was the ES. The 6E, we took two trades on the 6E this morning. We took this first one right in here. We got just a few ticks on that, I think. What did we end up with the 6E? The 6E were a plus 5. I think we got 3 ticks on this one and 2 ticks on this one or something like that. But the same stuff over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Yeah, some of you took 9 trades on the 6E, but you were killing it this morning, Frank, in the pre-market. How many trades did I take on the 6E? Did I take 2 or 3? I thought I just took 2. That one? Oh, 3. That one and that one. Okay. So I have 11 trades on the day. Hang on, I gotta mark that down. 11 trades. I thought I took 2. Alright, so I took a little profit on this one, a little profit on this one, and a break even on this one. That's how it worked for me on the 6E. It's the same stuff over and over and over again. You see, we had the bullish cross, the test of the BBC, the up close with bullish divergence. Got long, took a little profit, it kept going up. There was an opportunity to short here, an opportunity to short here. An opportunity to go long over here, which I did, and I took a little profit on that one. I shorted over here, and I took a break even on that one. And, you know, there was just a ton of opportunity. For those of you guys who like to get up early and trade in the pre-market, Frank, you know, how you were up 52 ticks, is that what you said? 52 ticks on let me just divide that baby by 4. That's 13 ES points equivalent on the euro in 9 trades. I didn't. Charlie, do you want me to? All right. So in here, right there was one. Right there was one. Now, I know you were doing some other things in there too, Frank, like trading, you know, as we showed in the partners meeting about a month ago. Like probably shorting right in there. Maybe not right there. But right in, you know, different opportunities that present themselves. But it's there. You know, for everyone who has not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for a free trial. It really is free. You know, we don't even ask you for any credit card information. All we ask for is a phone number and an email address. That's it. If you're taking the trial, if you sign up for the trial, take the trial, you know, do the whole experience. Download the charts, download the platform, download the indicators, the whole experience. You know, the way you're really going to benefit from it is to really immerse yourself in it as much as you can. Okay, it's 2 hours per day for 5 business days is the trial. You know, you can download the indicators and look at the stuff at night if you want. If for whatever reason you can't look at the trial during the day, then send us an email at support@cfrn.net and let us know that, you know, you're interested in taking the trial, but you don't have those first 2 hours every day. Just let us know. All right. With that, I believe we are going to wrap it up for the morning. Not for the morning session. Sorry. Just went right back into the morning session. I'm going to wrap up the recording portion of my recap anyway. Again, we are plus 34, 70 something. Let me tell you again. I got to add it up. Yeah, that was right. Plus $3,472.50 on the month. And we have 2 days left. See if we can hit that $4,000 mark. And we will we'll see if we can do that over the next couple of days. All right. If you have not taken a free trial with us, again, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. Okay. With that, I am going to wrap up the recording, and we'll send it off to Dwayne and David and Robin and Bert. There we go. All right. Recording is done.
All right. Very good. Thanks a lot, Michael.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right, guys, the chart up in front of you there is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. We rallied a little bit this morning prior to Mr. Bernanke beginning his presentation. We got up to this weekly zone at 95.96 and declined pretty well. The swing low yesterday was down at 81.75. Now, we do have one weekly trading zone still to go down below us here. And the trigger to get into that trade is probably as simple as breaking that low that was put in yesterday. You know, that low has held overnight and so far this morning. I'm not at all interested in being long in this market until we get back above 95.96 and we're able to hold that on some kind of a pullback. Now, this morning, we spiked above it just a little bit, popped right back below it. So if we get back to 95.96, if we get any type of consolidation there and then start to move back down, that's really the trade that I want to be in. A short from 95.96 back down to this swing low area here. Okay, it's kind of a double bottom we have going across here. Remember, these are hourly candles. And beyond that, if we break this double bottom, then I really want to be in that move because that thing could pick up some speed and take us down to our lowest weekly zone. Yesterday, we hit the 15/19/15/20 weekly zone up here. We spiked above it a little bit for a couple of hours. But once this thing started to decline, it got underway and it moved pretty briskly and took us into the afternoon And if we look left, we've not been in this territory for quite a while. Let's look at a daily chart real quick, get a little different perspective. Here we go. This was the gap up into the new year. We walked underneath this trend line, then we walked on top of this trend line, and then we broke the other day. And that was really a significant day there. Brought us back below. Now look what happened. We pulled up. We spiked the trend line from underneath. This is after walking on top of it for all these days. And now look where we are. If we can hold today, now this is on a daily chart, not an hourly, this is daily. If we can hold today and if we can close inside the body of this big red candle, we end up with a nice little green candle here. Even if we were to close where we are right now, just the fact that we put in a little green inside candle here, that's the beginning of a potential move back to the upside. If we lose our steam going into the afternoon and sell off, and if we get below this low that was put in yesterday, then that's going to be trouble. When Mike Reed was with us one day last week, Thursday, I believe it was, he had said that he saw 1512, I think it must have been Friday. Whichever day it was 1512, he had that as a area of resistance. And because remember, we put on that trade at 1511, so maybe it was Friday. He said if they do get through this area, though, if there is one more rally, he says, I expect it to be 1523.24. So he called that really nicely. So I want to give him, in fact, he's not with us today, but he's probably out there tuned in listening. So Mike, our friend Mike Reed, the Trade Stalker. If you haven't been over, check him out, TradeStalker.com. Great guy. Okay, so where from here? All right, we're going to watch this. We're going to see if we can get back to 95.96. If we run into resistance there, we'll be happy to sell this thing back down to test these lows and potentially beyond. Okay. The other market I want to mention real quick is the Japanese yen. Okay. Let's go to, well, this is, it shows up pretty good on an hourly. This is the open Sunday night. We had a tweet that went out late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. The markets weren't even open. But our comment was that this looks like the yen is trying to put in a bottom here. There's some basing action. And I'll show you on the daily. It shows up a little better. And sure enough, it took off. It held this important area that I wanted to see it hold on a pullback right in here. Okay. The first time it got up, it came back through it, but then you can see it held. Now we're up against dynamic resistance on an hourly. Dynamic support and resistance and fixed support and resistance are two different animals. This is based on price action as it happens, as it unfolds. Okay, these are based on what's happening right now. When you see the weekly trading zones, those are based on what's happened in the past. It has nothing to do with what's happening right now. So, yes, when those two things come together, that can make for a fairly powerful indication. So, let's look at this on the daily, and you'll see what I was looking at Saturday night. Shrink it down. Now, see, this thing's been falling for a long time.
Dwayne, you mind if I jump in here for a minute?
Hey, Ben, how are you? Come on in.
Good, good. Thank you. I've been listening, and spot on. I mean, from what I'm hearing you say, the only thing I could really add to it was just, I'm not sure, you might have already mentioned talk about the bond, the 30-year. A big move there yesterday, and You know, one thing that kind of took or that caught my attention a little bit yesterday was we have been seeing that you know, common or fairly familiar inverse correlation to the dollar. And we saw it a little bit. We saw it yesterday morning that the dollar was catching bid. That was a big part of what we saw the sell-off related to, I think. After the 9 o'clock numbers, I think it was yesterday. And then it kind of fizzled out. And the sell-side activity continued here, but the move continued in the bonds. So I'm actually thinking that it's not so much money coming out of S&Ps or the stocks into the dollar so much. I think that was related yesterday, or that was going on earlier yesterday, as the weakness in the euro, you know, as there was uncertainty about the Italian election. But the dollar S&P kind of trade sort of broke down towards the late afternoon session, and it was the bonds that really continued to hold up. So the bonds right now, again, they're back up to the ones they're above that right now, trading in positive territory still. So I'm kind of looking at the bonds for a little bit of a lead here, a little bit of a lean, and not so much the dollar. I mean, the dollar's been on a tear, though. You know, you have to give it credit, and holding, you know, sustaining bid levels. So I don't want to interrupt you too much, because I know you were on a specific topic there.
No, finishing off the thought. For those of you who don't know, this is Ben from our tradersaudio.com. Ben squawks the market every day from the floor of the exchange. He's right there in the thick of the action. So
hey, guys. Good morning. And so yesterday, Dwayne, was one of the best days we've seen down here in months. I mean,
really?
You know, energy, participation, there was volume, there was volatility associated with, you saw the spike in the VIX up to 818 level. So again, you know, and it was shocking to see the 1486 level. I think everybody was felt like 1500 was certainly within range, but 1486 and we, you know, now we are seeing a bit of a bid come into the market here right now. So, and I heard you talking about that green candle potentially setting up here right now. So,
yep.
So yeah, I mean, I really think that I actually feel like there's still weight on this market right now. I think that we'll revisit those lows at some point. I also feel like as long as the bonds are holding these bid levels up above that mid-144 handle, I think it kind of puts pressure on the stock. So, but everybody here is just talking about how nice it is to see that energy, and it has really been a few days for the most part. It actually started.
When
were the minutes last week? Was that Thursday?
No, it was Wednesday. We got the notes released.
Wednesday,
and you know, I didn't read or hear anything in those notes released that was that alarming. But the market,
that was
the day that the market
dollar loved it.
Yeah. What do you think that was all about?
Well, I think what it is that. I think it wasn't so much that there was hawkish or that there was any indication of an interest rate hike, but I think that there was a lack of any indication of any, you know, further Fed activity along the status quo. I think that investors and I think the market, the dollar specifically, is starting to see that the potential for the interest rate hike is higher than the potential for another, you know, drop. So that's really what it came down to for me. And I think a lot of it was related to the dollar activity at first, but like I said, I think it's shifted a little bit now as some of the attention's gone more towards the bonds. So I think those are the two to watch. I mean, I got to run here, Dwayne, but I wanted to come in just for a minute and say hi, especially after a high energy day like yesterday.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you stopping by, guys. Go visit Ben at tradersaudio.com. Take advantage of the free trial.
Thanks again.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Guys, if you've never heard anyone squawk the market, you really should go take the free trial and just, he squawks the S&P. He's been doing that forever. But he's got some other markets he's squawking now too. I think crude, I think some Forex. Go to his site, tradersaudio.com. You can choose from different markets. You can, I think you only get one free trial. Maybe you get a free trial per market. I don't know. Go there and check it out. But you'll hear them calling prices auctioneer style throughout the whole day. And you occasionally get to hear the roar of the crowd in the background. Now, there used to actually be a roar. These days, with most of the trading shifting over to electronic, I mean, there's still a group of people there, still trading, still getting excited occasionally, and still making a little bit of noise. But nothing like it used to be, however. It's still there. So if you've never experienced it, you should, just so you can say you've heard it, that you've heard the roar of the pit or the hum. It's more of a hum today, I think, than a roar. I've heard the pit hum, and it might be something that would complement your trading. You might enjoy it. Might make you feel a little connected, you know. If not, well, hey, enjoy the free trial, okay? Back to, just real quick, the yen. And the reason I'm spending more time on this, or I want you to pay a little more attention to this, perhaps, is because it's such a big picture type. Japan's been trying to recover for, I don't know, going on 20 years now or so, 15, 20. It's been a long time. Nothing they've done has seemed to work. It's still a struggle. And the yen has really shown here of late. I mean, look at this thing. Okay. Now, this here, this is the longest period we've had going sideways in quite a while. This is a daily chart. But this area right across here, that's really got my attention. And that's why I put out the information that I put out early Sunday morning. I said, watch for this thing to get going on the upside. If it does, and if it can hold on a pullback, which it did so far, then, I mean, there's, look at all the upside potential this thing. I mean, when we talk about, you know, a trade having room to run, wow. Yeah, Frank says it's been about 24 years that they've been trying to recover since 1989, give or take. So there's just so much room to run for this thing if it really gets going. Okay? Now, I'm not saying it's going to go straight up, but it's the type of trade that if you're on the right side of it, goodness, it's a trade you might be able to be in for weeks, months, I don't know. Given the big picture backdrop, maybe years, if they actually have, you know, are in the beginnings of a recovery here. So it's not something you got to dive into today, you know, make sure you get long today or anything. It's just something to watch, keep your eye on. And if we do start to see the yen recovering, then that will create other opportunities as well. So just kind of keep something to keep your eye on, okay? Now, our remarks on the euro were a little bit different. This is the daily chart. Now, what we had said on the euro was that if we took out Friday's low, this was more of a direct type of thing. Considered to be short below Friday's low. So right there is where you would have potentially got in to this trade. The low Friday was 131.47, and the low today so far is 130.20. So I guess that's about 120 pips so far that it's dropped. Thing is it, you know, just like the yen has room to run on the upside, this has got some room to run on the downside. So again, it's quite a big picture backdrop as the yen, but it's still pretty big, and I still think there's some pretty decent opportunity in there. Okay, it's time for us to head out to Vegas, visit with Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com. And Robin will not be with us today, but she'll be back with us again tomorrow. Tomorrow I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, you know, sometimes people look at trading and commissions, and you hear about overtrading, and, you know, am I overtrading, am I undertrading, and how do I know what's right? And, well, what's right for you is, are you making any money, you know? At the end of the day, it doesn't, you know, this is my philosophy, at the end of the day, whether you've made one trade or 1,000, that's really not the part that's relevant. What's relevant is, were you profitable? Because, you know, maybe you've reined it in. Boy, you're really good at never making more than 3 trades a day. Okay? But Are you profitable? You know, whatever your idea of being profitable is, maybe it's a couple points a day, maybe you have some dollar amount, but whatever it might be, ask yourself, because, you know, sometimes I hear things like, well, you know, that wouldn't work for me because I don't want to give all my money to the broker. Well, okay, I'm sure you don't want to give all your money to anybody, but if I let's give you an example. If I could make $200 a day and only have to give the broker $10, that's one scenario. But what if I can make $2,000, but by trading that way, I've got to give the broker $1,000? Which is better? Let me throw that out there again. I make $200 and I only have to give the broker $10. But if I trade a different way, I can make $2,000, but then I'm giving 50% of what I make to the broker. I'm giving him $1,000 a day, man. The guy's he's sending his kids to college off my back. Okay. Well, bottom line is, you're making $800 more, and you're sending his kids to college. This isn't about me sticking up for a broker, although I would stick up for our brokers any day, Bert and Leslie. Toll free, 866-928-3310. No one will work harder to earn your business and keep your business than they do, but that's not even my point here. My point is about you and how you might be thinking about trading, frequency, commissions, costs, all that kind of thing. You know, the beautiful thing about trading e-mini futures is commission costs with direct access to the markets has come way down. I mean, round turn, you're paying $6-7, right, per contract, round turn. Nothing like what you used to pay back in the day with equities, where you might pay $7,500 to get into a trade and then a couple $300 to get out, and because they were taking part of your profits, depending upon what kind of broker you had. I mean, there's all kinds of crazy things that went on. This is so clean, so efficient, so easy to manage. So, again, think about if you wrestle with that demon, okay, about commissions, think about this. If I'm very conservative, I can make $200 a day, and I only have to give up $10 to the broker. Or I have this other method that allows me to make more money, but then I have to give half of what I make to the broker. Don't sell yourself. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. All right, we're going to go to Vegas, talk to David Williams from PageTrader.com. Don't go away. Don't touch that radio dial. We'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
The song I sing to the markets. Good morning, Wayne.
Hey, good morning, Mike. Good morning, David. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Dwayne. And good. I don't know if Michael Bork is with us today.
He has gone already. It's just you and I.
Oh, well, that's what makes it good then. And then Robin's not with us today either. I'm sure she's out,
she's
possibly
out.
Training or
tomorrow.
Taking care of something.
She'll be back tomorrow.
It's a beautiful day in Las Vegas.
Good job. I thought
there
it was
we go. It is a beautiful day in Las Vegas. Thank you, Robin. Well, I tell you, we've had a lot of volatility in the markets between just yesterday and today. Just about everything we all look at has really been moving. And, you know, we believe that 2013 is going to mark a very important year for increased volatility in the markets. If you're thinking about, I know most people are already trading, but I just want to say it. If you're thinking about either getting into trading or if you're into trading and thinking about taking it more seriously. I have to tell you, the year of 2013 is a really good year to do it. I don't care whose method you use. I really don't. But I'm telling you, the volatility is going to make this year. We talked about this in 2012. We believe that there's a larger, for lack of a better word, sort of a global volatility cycle that is due in the majority of the markets that we all follow here on the radio program. And with that volatility, it's going to make trades bigger, profit targets more distant, better trading all around. So this is a really good time this year, the year of 2013, to do this. That is either get involved in it or to expand your education. What you know is reflected in what you do in the market. It's hard to know something and not do it. Ever notice that? You know, if you know it, that's pretty much equivalent to doing it, unless you forget. And that is actually something that happens sometimes. Sometimes you do forget, but when you know something, it's hard not to do it. Almost impossible, especially if that thing is something you believe in. So, therefore, what you know is very important, and you want to protect it, and you also want to grow it, and you do that by getting continued education. That education may come from the markets themselves. It may come from an outside source like a book or taking some kind of training, but it comes in one form or another. And if you are living the life of, that many traders do, where they're practically obsessed by the markets and obsessed by grinding and thinking about this, I do want to make a little bit of a distinction for you, having been on both sides of this, is that you can obsess about the markets and get very, very deeply involved in all the minutiae and all the whatever it is that you get involved with. That isn't necessarily the same thing as growing your knowledge base. Obsession isn't the same thing, although sometimes obsession leads to tremendous growth as well. But you might want to just double check with yourself that you're not just obsessing over an idea or obsessing over something that isn't necessarily helping you grow your knowledge. That means that when you go to trade in the market, you have a certain knowledge that you're putting to use that is working for you, does have reasonable results, and then you're looking to grow that. Because I did obsess over the markets for many, many years about setups and thinking all the different ways they could happen. I remember once we had a water park out here many years ago, and they're building a new one, by the way, that was located right next to the Sahara Hotel on Las Vegas Boulevard. This was in the 80s, perhaps I think in the 90s as well, called Wet and Wild. And if you've ever been to Wet and Wild, it's a water park. Everyone goes there. They get into their bathing suits, and they go on big slides and neat little water pools and lazy rivers and all kinds of fun stuff. It's a great way to spend, especially if you're in the middle of the desert, a long, slow afternoon. You know, and kids could go there and, you know, relax while their parents were gambling or whatever, you know. So I remember being at Wet and Wild. This is the obsessive side. And instead of enjoying myself, I remember being at Wet n Wild, thinking about a particular kind of trading setup, and just sitting there with a pen and piece of paper and writing all the different ways it could happen. And to a certain extent, that's a good exercise, but I was obsessing. I was just beyond, I wasn't at the point where I was really gaining new knowledge. I just wanted anything to do with trading to be coming out of me. I was thinking about it all day and night. And many of you, I know, have done that and do that. Trading lends itself very easily to that because there are so many things that you can think about with these markets. But I do want to say that having been through the obsessive phase, there's really a more reasonable approach that doesn't require obsession. And often the obsession actually ends up sort of almost repeating itself over and over and over again. And you're really kind of spinning your wheels and you're not getting ahead. So to get ahead isn't necessarily mean that you're making more money. It means that your understanding is improving on the markets as opposed to obsessing about something. So you know, it might be hard to verbally say it, but maybe you can make a connection with that on some level for yourself, the difference between obsession over something and having a strong interest and following that interest up, educating yourself, putting practices to work, you know, making right decisions and that sort of thing. There is a difference. I think there is a need at some point for some kind of obsession with the markets in order to get you really into them, but it can be damaging. It did spin me off for a little while. I really got to the point where, as I've mentioned before, my hair was really long, my nails were long. I mean, I was indistinguishable from the mentally ill. I'm not sure that I'm still not indistinguishable from the mentally ill, but friends said, you know, David, you look bad, you know, you look, you know, I was in that obsession phase. And so, just if you feel you're obsessing over it, you know, you could go and talk to, Robin Dane as an example. I've checked her out. I think she knows what she's talking about, and I think she can be helpful. I think actually even Bert Schlichter, a person who's not necessarily a coach, but anybody that you talk to if you feel like you're obsessing on something, can maybe help you sort of be a mirror to you a little bit and maybe help see that that behavior isn't necessarily good for you and so on. And you can just drop it. You can just get over it. It won't take you years and all that. You can just drop it. It actually can happen. So for me, you know, I had to get over that. And everyone, I think everybody goes through the obsessive behavior with markets. Part of it is the idea, and this is something that is you hear this all the time, gosh, I'd love to quit my job. You know, how many times? If I had a dollar for every time I heard that, that would be the kind of trading I'm doing. I would just be going up to people talking about trading until they said that. Everybody wants to quit their job, it seems like. And we want trading to take that over. And it is possible for that to happen. But I never suggest to people to quit their job because you will know absolutely without any outside reference point whether or not you can quit your job by your own success and your own just by your own measurement. You'll be able to say, hey, I can really do this. I think I've got a handle on this. And at some point, you can then make your own decision. I don't want to be a part of that decision unless you know from yourself and can show that you can do this. It took me many years to be able to get to a point where I could say to myself, you know, this is something that I can do for the rest of my life for income, you know, something like that. It doesn't happen necessarily overnight. And there's very few naturals. There's a few, but there's very few naturals in this business. I happen to know a couple, actually. One of them, Dwayne, you don't know, I don't think, but he has listened to the radio program before, and Bert knows him. Another one is our friend Michael X, who I know he's a natural because of what he's been able to do. But other than the naturals, we all have to work, we all have to practice until we get better and better at it. I told you the story of, it's a silly story, but I might as well just tell it again, of the best Mexican food I have ever had was made by Chinese people. And there was a taco stand out here in Las Vegas that used to be open called Taco Ole. And this was just a remarkable place. The Mexican food was just so good, people would line up out the door for this Mexican food. And this Chinese woman worked behind the counter, and I always thought that she was an employee of a Spanish or Mexican person who owned this because the food was so good. Finally, one day, I said to her, I says, does the owner, you know, is he around and does he, you know, see how well they're doing? And I'm sure he does. I can't remember what I asked, but it was something relating to the owner. And she said to me, well, she's here every day. And I thought, oh, that's nice. And of course, it turns out that she said that she's the owner. And she was a Chinese woman. And I said, well, this is really remarkable that you, you know, it, obviously anybody can do anything, but I was really surprised that a Chinese woman was making the very best Mexican food I had ever had. And all these people recognized that. And I said, how did you get so good at this? And she said, practice, practice, practice. So listen, if a Chinese woman could make the best Mexican food that you've ever eaten, then any of us can get pretty darn good at trading and figure out how to make it work for us. Don't let other people and other stories you hear about how people do things or what they've done with their, don't let that be a wrong influence on you, because what that does is it makes you want to act like somebody else, and you'll just have to burn through a couple of years, 5 years, maybe longer, doing that before you realize that it isn't anything to do about acting like other people. It's about finding how you are comfortable. Where's your voice in all this? Where's your voice for the market, for how you act in the market? You know, forget other people. You can learn from them, but you're going to have to learn to trade by your own lights. And once you do, and once you see that your own light, then you won't have any question about what other people are doing and stuff like that. When you're beginning this, that is an issue, you know, if you hang around other traders and stuff. But in the end, you'll find that you can be very comfortable with what you, the kinds of setups that you like to find, the things, the way you like to enter, whether you're more aggressive or less aggressive, and so on. So whatever methodology you use, whatever technique you use, you may end up using it, and I'm quite sure this is the case, you will end up using it in the end quite differently than perhaps it's originally shown to you. If it's a method, if it's a system, so to speak, where you're trading off of an actual system. But that's good. You want to do that. You want to find your own way. Just like you found your own way in so many other things in life. You found your own way if you happen to be a musician, you play the instrument your particular way. If you happen to be a teacher, you teach your way. Well, that's what's going to happen in trading. And honestly, until that does happen, you're not going to be achieving the kinds of results probably that would really keep you satisfied. You can always learn. You can always learn from others, but you want to let that filter down and find out who you are. We've talked about this in the markets, and relax into that. Don't strain. Don't try to copy other people, because you can spend years and years copying other people, and it never quite connects with you. And you are a really, really big, important part of your own trading. It has to connect with you. So keep that in mind. That's something we sometimes talk about here. And I do encourage people, I just want to mention this again, that I don't know if it matters who you talk to as long as they know about the markets. And Robin Dane actually does know about markets and has been around them and been around a lot of people that have traded in them. If you have issues that are what she would call maybe a block of some kind or something that you're fighting to get through, you could come to me and I'll just say, get rid of it. You know, I'll just be that blunt, just forget it. Or you can also go to her, and she may actually help you work through it if you need to go that route. Because believe it or not, you can actually get rid of anything you're ready to get rid of. The thing itself isn't the trouble. It's whether you're ready to let it go. And because we don't ever look at the you're ready part, we think that the thing itself is sticking to us like glue. It isn't. It's just a thing. It's just an idea, whatever that problem is. But you're not actually ready internally for some reason or another to just let it go. That's the work of a coach. That's the work of, or you working on your own, is to realize that there is no power in that blockage or that thing that's sitting there. It has no power at all. The power is that it has comes from you and your unwillingness to let it go. So instead of idolizing that thing as, ooh, here's a big thing that's a really big problem for me, oh, that makes me shudder. Well, it only makes you shudder because you actually have not come to the point where you're ready to let it go. You are prior to it having power. It has power only through your unwillingness to let it go. That's its power. And once you actually see that, I mean, as a real experience, you see for yourself, wow, I am giving this thing its whole existence. At that split second, the whole thing collapses. It goes away. The reason it goes away is because it had no life without that energy of you being unwilling to let it go, you pinning it, so to speak, into a spot as furniture in the living room of your mind. And then when you let it go, the habit may come back and you find yourself doing it again. But after a short period of time, you can just let it go. And that's a beautiful thing. It'll teach you that you're capable of a lot more than you thought, because here's a problem that you couldn't walk through, and suddenly here you're doing it. Have you ever seen somebody who said, as an example, maybe they had stage fright and they could never get on stage and just crumple them? Well, mm-hmm. there really is nothing frightening about being on a stage. But to all of us, it seems like there would be, because we haven't come to the point where we're willing to let go of that idea. The stage has nothing, no power in it. The people in the audience have no power in them. All of that has no power. What does have power is your unwillingness to release it. That's where its power is. But because we don't slow our minds down and look at what's really happening, we think the thing has the power. It doesn't. And so once you see that little secret, you'll find that you can break through all kinds of very, many of them will be very strange ideas and thoughts, fears that you have about life and death and strange things happening, all kinds of stuff you've accumulated. You can walk right through them when you understand that they are actually powerless, that you are actually pinning them to the wall and holding them in front of yourself and shaking like a leaf in front of them. And when you see that the power is in you, not in the thing, and really see it, it's not just it's a nice intellectual idea, but to really see it is really a revelation, you'll find that you can let all kinds of things go, including blockages in trading, ideas that may be causing you grief in your trading and so on. So I would suggest either, if you do want to talk to somebody, you either talk to Robin Dane or talk to Bert Schlichter. One of the things that Bert has that Robin doesn't have is he has 25 years of dealing with thousands of traders, in a year. I mean, he's just got, they're calling him all the time, and he's hearing every kind of complaint. Now, both of them have, skill sets in their own world. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that Bert has is he's constantly interacting with traders. So if you want to give him a call or Robin a call to walk through, talk through a blockage, either one of those people would be great. If you call me, I'm just going to tell you to drop it, because I know you can.
Bert has a unique,
I'm going to hang up.
Bert has a unique vantage point because
yes, he does.
People can tell you anything, but he actually, he's a man behind the curtain. He really knows what's going on. He's seen the good, the bad, the ugly. He knows.
There's no doubt.
If you're trying to fool him or fool yourself, I'm saying
you've been naughty or nice. He knows if you've been naughty or nice.
If you're a client of his, he knows exactly what's going on. He's seen your trading habits. He knows what you do. And so it really is a good person to be able to have a relationship with, because he has seen people succeed. He has seen people fail. And I'm going to say, without a doubt, over the years, he has picked up on the fact that certain people have certain traits. People who succeed have specific traits, and people who don't succeed have specific. So you could just say, hey, Bert, could you help me get on the right track? What kind of habits should I be developing? What kind of traits should I be exhibiting so that I end up on the right side of the street? And who knows? That might be the phone call right there that turns everything around for you, because you're starting to approach it from a completely different direction. Toll free.
Absolutely.
Call him up, 866-928-3310.
There you are. So, Dwayne, what is the news that is responsible for some of these big movements that we've seen just in the last day or so here? Do you believe, or do you know?
Yesterday, there was no real news that I'm aware of. Nothing. I mean, there's the Italian thing. They're having elections, and their economy is pretty fragile. And so yesterday they were saying, well, it has to do with Italy. And so maybe it does. This morning, Bernanke testified for a couple of hours. And one would have thought that his comments would have rattled the markets or soothed the markets. And I would say, for 2 hours of testimony, he didn't do too much damage. Gold perked up when he started. The markets started to drop when he started to talk. Gold perked up. And now we're just kind of quietly sideways here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so beyond that, I'm not aware of any news.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because we've seen over the years many, many instances. How many instances have we seen? I mean, a countless number of instances where you would assign, or you see the people on TV assign an event. When they don't know what makes a market move, they search for something they can say. The market's moved higher today on news that, you know, ducks like this certain kind of food or whatever. You know, they'll reach for anything because they don't know what to do with a market that moves without news. They don't know how to connect it all together. They have to go reach for something. And often it is something really obvious. But like we're seeing recently here, I don't think there is a individual piece of news that sent the market. And people do like to have a reason. Oh, why is the market down so much? You know, why did this happen? To this day, as you know, we've talked about this before, that the crash of 1987 has never been explained. There was a full commission. Ronald Reagan had put a full, you know, market crash commission to work. You'd sure think there was some big news relating to that. And for a long time, we all heard, oh, the market's crashed because of program trading.
Mm-hmm.
And so program trading got the bad rap for a long time because people need to have a reason. Well, you know, we have 1,000 times more program trading today than we did in 1987. My goodness, 10,000 times more program trading. And so the markets trade even better now than they did then. So, you know, that obviously was just a reach. You know, they're just stretching for something. So the markets do have a technical nature to them. They do have to run to particular levels. Even if they're not forecastable by a particular methodology, the markets do move to these levels. Quite often, those bigger moves are associated with news cycles, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes it's just the market has to go move to a number. In our particular case, this decline, ordinarily for us, we think, probably needs to go somewhat lower here before it's over, somewhere into at least the, this is not really a forecast, but as a more general outlook, we think that the 74, 75 level not necessarily is buying territory, but it's probably a level that we would like to see and we think would be the normal place for the market to make a test or attempt at, say 75 on the downside. So we're up at 91. So we think that there's a possibility for lower prices and the likelihood of that. And so our attitude is to potentially be sellers at important rallies. You know, like as an example, this morning we've gotten up to just recently up to this 94 level here. And in today's, for us, in our support and resistance panel, 94/95 is an important selling territory. So this is an area that we're trying to get short in because we think there's a possibility. It's a trade, and we're willing to take the shot here and see if we can get in for possibly the beginning of the next leg down. You know, sometimes you get into a trade like that, and it doesn't turn out to be the next leg down, but it still is a trade. It still is tradable, but it doesn't turn out to be the next leg. Sometimes you trade it, and similar to what recently happened in crude oil, where we had this February 13th top, and we thought, you know what, that could be the top that starts the whole big decline. And gosh darn, that's that time. That's exactly how it played out. So each one of these is different, but if you're willing to trade at or near critical price levels, the odds are much, much more in your favor than if you just consider the markets random and just buy or sell at any old place. And I know most people listening wouldn't do that necessarily. So having said that, we think there's it's likely that we're going to see lower prices before this decline is over. This doesn't, for us, change the bigger picture, but we're open to the idea that perhaps the market's done all it can do. The longer-term target for us, given back in August of last year, was 1515. Later, we said if they get above that, then the next important one would be 1538 to 1540. We tried to get above these levels or get to those levels. They only got to 1530. And so we'll see. Obviously, the month is going to close. I believe it's likely that the month is going to close Well, let's put it this way. We'll see how the month closes, because we don't have a forecast for it, but we've talked about this. A monthly close in February below 1515 is one of the earliest signs that the top that we've been talking about would be forming. It's not that it's all in and all over, but that it's forming, that we've got to start on the top by closing the month of February. And that we have a few days left in February here. Let's just double check what we have left in February, because it's the calendar.
Thursday's
yeah, we have a couple days.
Yeah, Thursday's the last
yeah,
day.
Thursday's the last day of February. So then we break into March. And is it just me, or is the year kind of zipping along pretty good already here? You know, year 2013, we're already in March. So just a few days away here. So anyway, we'll see how they handle that. We think 75 or lower. We actually messaged this out yesterday once the move was underway, that we thought that in Messenger Pro that the market would want to touch 75, 74. We're going to stick to that and see if we can trade to that level. And then we'll go from there. And Dwayne, if you want to add anything on the S&P, please go ahead.
Well, we're just waiting for this little double bottom here to get taken out. And then we've got our final weekly zone's about 15 points farther down.
Okay.
So we had a weekly zone here. So on this pull up to the zone, some people got short there for this move. Some are still in it. Some have taken profits. But the real catalyst for me is to see a break of this little area right down here. Because we don't have anything specific in that area. But the market obviously has something there, because that's right exactly where it screeched to a halt yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, seeing it rally up here and turn back down, that's expected. It looked like this morning we were going to, because this was a pretty strong bullish candle that was working when I was talking to Ben when he popped in, and it looked like that would take us back up into the zone one more time before this sell-off began, but we didn't quite get there. I mean, we got really close. I mean, the swing high was 94, and so 95, 96, I mean, a zone it's an area. So I would have to say that's just as close as it could get. And as you say, sometimes when it doesn't get where you think it's going to go, that may show some, you know, additional weakness. So that adds to the case.
Yes.
That a break of these lows opens the door mm-hmm. for a pretty pretty good move down.
Yeah. So. If I was a farmer and I had a lot of cattle and I had a big list of where, of all that cattle, that would be a catalyst.
Huh.
Okay. We'll just move right on. You said the word catalyst earlier, and I'm silly.
I said catalyst, and it made you giggle.
Publicly, I just want to come clean and say that I'm silly. I have that problem. I'll just come clean with
funny.
That now.
All right.
Do you want to move on to another market, or are there any questions about any of either from what Dwayne said or what I'm talking about with regard to the markets here? If not, then We'll go a little bit further.
Well, there's a question. Why will the euro go up and the S&P go down when there's so much trouble in Europe?
You know, these are questions for other people, because I don't know, and I don't know how tenuous or valid the connection between markets is. I know what they can normally go. You know, there used to be a company. Let me give you just a two-minute little thing. I can't remember the name of it, but a whole movie was made about a company that managed money based upon the idea that markets all did certain things when other markets did certain things. And they put all up. And actually, for a couple of years, for several years, somebody out in the audience may know about them, and there was a really good movie made with the principals of this company and so on. If somebody named the company, I would recognize it. I just can't remember it. But what happened was that they did a lot of this type of trading, where one market would move to go down, and that meant the other market would go up, and so on. And for several years, they had 30%+ and so on returns. Which, by the way, that may not sound like a lot of money, but go get $1 billion and see if you can make 30% with it. It's a very different game in size than it is with a small account. And so these people were doing very well. This company was doing very well. Long-Term Capital, I think that's the name of the company. If I'm wrong, I apologize if I'm naming out some company that I shouldn't, but I think that may have been it. Anyway, and so what happened was that their strategy had to do with this whole business of this market does this and that market, that means this market's going to do that. And they based their whole strategy on that, and for several years it did very well. And suddenly, all the markets started doing the same thing, and they were losing $500 million a day, like $500 million losses per day. They finally had to get bailed out. Some of you may remember, I think it was Long-Term Capital or something like that. The government had to come and bail them out. I don't know what happened to them. But I'm bringing that up because that was their strategy, and it isn't always going to be the case. We all know that. But it really wasn't the case for quite some period of time for them, that all of the markets ended up going sort of in the same direction that they had been tracking. You know how the dollar and the dollar goes up, euro goes down, you know, and that's a pretty good one. That's a pretty tight one. I can live with that one. But there's a lot of other ones that I would have trouble putting any reliance on at all. But having said that, I don't know the answer to your question, except that that connection is really only there under certain conditions. You know, everything is conditional. I mean, gravity is conditional, for God's sakes. Everything is conditional. In other words, it's based on conditions. So when those conditions change, the thing changes. And so whatever the most solid thing you can think of, it's conditional. If it's in the physical manifest world, we're not talking about some other world. We're talking about just the ordinary everyday world. Everything is conditional. The sky is blue. Well, that's conditional. Gravity exists. Well, that's conditional. Light travels at 186,000 miles per second. Sorry, that's conditional. So everything is based upon conditions. So these connections between markets, the euro goes down, the S&P go down, and so on, they're conditional. And the thing is you don't have to be afraid if you're trading off of that. You just have to know what you're going to do and how you're going to act when it doesn't act correctly, and just manage that position correctly. And there are a number of traders, really good ones. Please don't kid yourself and think that you may be in this category. You may be, but I'm just going to say for the record, most aren't, who can trade uncertainty. That means when the market does something really surprising, they can get in there and trade that tremendous uncertainty. Remember yesterday when the market broke down, the S&P broke down? And it's like, wow, that's unusual. They're breaking these critical levels. They're moving below here. And everyone's kind of like, wow, this thing's really moving. Well, there are traders who are very good at finding and trading uncertainty. That's their specialty. It would be a great tool to have in the tool belt to be able to actually trade uncertainty and trade it effectively, powerfully, boldly. Certainly, it has to be traded boldly because uncertainty means everybody's uncertain, including the guy that's trading it, the guy that has that skill. He probably doesn't feel real comfortable getting in it, but he knows what he's looking for, and there's all that uncertainty in the air. You could feel it. It was palpable yesterday when the markets broke. So there are people that can do that, but that's another rare skill. It's not common, that's for sure, that people are comfortable doing that. Everybody tries to find a setup that works for them, and that's perfectly legitimate. But when your setup is that the world's coming apart at the seams, or that no one understands what's happening, or whatever the thing is, when that's your setup, that's unusual. That's a different kind of game, and it can be very, very profitable for that type of trading, because those markets tend to really have big moves, that kind of movement. I think we're going to see a lot more of that during 2013. We're already almost through, you know, at the end of March, we'll be through the first whole quarter here of 2013. But I think there's a lot of good volatility coming.
That company that you mentioned, Long-Term Capital Management, they were a hedge fund based in Greenwich, Connecticut. They used absolute return trading strategies, such as fixed income arbitrage, statistical arbitrage, and pairs trading, combined with high financial leverage. The firm's master hedge fund, Long-Term Capital Portfolio, collapsed in the late 1990s, leading to an agreement on September 23rd of 98 among 14 financial institutions for a $3.6 billion dollar bailout under the supervision of the Federal Reserve. It was founded in 1994 by John Merriweather, former vice chairman and head of bond trading at Salomon Brothers. Members of the board of directors included Myron Scholes and Robert Merton, who shared the 1997 Nobel Peace Prize, or no, the Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Sciences, for a new method to determine the value of derivatives. Now, this is really interesting. In 1997, these guys get a Nobel Prize, initially successful.
That's right.
Annualized returns of over 40% after fees in its first few years.
Mm-hmm.
In 1998, it lost $4.6 billion in less than 4 months following the Russian financial crisis requiring financial intervention by the Federal Reserve, with the fund liquidating and dissolving in early 2000.
Yeah. So it really was just a couple years of good returns based on this particular outlook. Their main thing, even though the way they spread it out, it looked like they were all over the map, their main thing was really looking for this market to go down and that market to go up. And they all went the same direction. And there you are. Now, the interesting thing is that had they had a strategy, and I think the prize, the Nobel Prize that the two fellows got, and they were really bright guys. Really,
I'm guessing,
you know,
with that last name, Scholes.
Yeah, it's the Black-Scholes. Yeah, the Black-Scholes model for options pricing, and that's when they say derivatives. They're talking about the Black-Scholes model attempts to treat how option pricing gets that way. And if that confuses you, here's what it really is. These guys didn't invent options trading. Options trading was already there. And options price, it looks like options price themselves. If you're watching the ticker, they're going up and down. And how is that pricing occurring? Why do groups of people agree that an option is worth this much? And they broke it down statistically into all the various bits of what options are, and they came up with what's called the Black-Scholes model. This is a really simplified thing but they came up with the Black-Scholes model, which really in a way was a remarkable achievement, because they had quantified many things that up to that point, 1998 or whatever, had not really been quantifiable or had not been laid down in that form that clearly, and something that could really be kind of relied upon to give you what a price of an option should be under a given set of conditions that had not existed before. So they came up with the Black-Scholes model. It still is used, but, you know, it has its weaknesses as well and so on. And there's been subsequent option pricing models. And again, remember, it's a model trying to model a reality. The reality is that there's an options market and prices are moving up and down in those options. The options have a expiration date, they have time decay factor, they have all these other things in there. And the model is trying to say, this is what the option should be priced at under this set of conditions. So it's a model. And their model was worthy of a prize. And I actually agree that it was worthy of a prize. I mean, there's no question in my mind, it was a brilliant piece of work. It turns out that it still is used, and it may, in fact, have lost some of its overall value. There's been a number of other derivative type of models that have come out and so on. But they were really smart guys, so there was no question that they had the smarts. It would have been nice if they would have, I know this sounds really dumb, but used stops and gotten themselves out of bad positions. Because what they were doing, the only way you lose that much money is by holding on to losing positions and saying things like, the market should come back. I hope it comes back. It better come back. You know, that kind of thing. And it doesn't come back or
whatever.
It can't
go any farther.
Yeah, it can't go any further. Right, exactly. So that had to be a very torturous time for them, but a lot of lessons were probably learned in that. And there's a great movie on it. If you go on YouTube, or I'm not sure where, but there's a movie made about the whole thing. And it's really fairly done. It's beautifully done, as a matter of fact. It's a very engaging and very interesting movie.
You don't remember the name of it?
Well, I don't, but it was on TV when I saw it. I recorded it, and it's probably somewhere on YouTube.
Okay. Well, we'll try to dig it out. Pairs trading is a market-neutral trading strategy enabling traders to profit from virtually any market condition, uptrend, downtrend, sideways. The strategy is categorized as a statistical arbitrage and convergence trading strategy. The strategy monitors performance of two historically correlated securities.
Right.
When the correlation between the two securities temporarily weakens, i.e., one stock moves up while the other moves down, the pair's trade would be to short the outperforming stock and to go long the underperforming stock, betting that the spread between the two will eventually converge. Mm-hmm. The divergence within a pair can be caused by temporary supply-demand changes, large buy-sell orders for one security, reaction for important news about one of the companies, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And what happened was, that's a good example of, instead of the spread getting back into line, the spread just got wider and wider and wider.
Now, interestingly, this is from Wikipedia. although the strategy does not have much downside risk, well, $4.6 billion, that's kind of... anyway, it's in Wiki, it says, although the strategy does not have much downside risk, there is a scarcity of opportunities, and for profiting, the trader must be one of the first to capitalize on the opportunity.
Okay.
Interesting.
Well, you know, in the end, there's plenty of people who make a living off of spread trading and having spreads return to their... normal position and so on. These guys were doing it in huge size, and they were not using stops, obviously. Had they used stops, they wouldn't have had positions go on and on and on and just get wiped out. So what they were saying was, let's wait another day, the spread should return, and so on. But if it gets to a certain point, I'm not sure that that kind of trading actually indicates a stop for the people that are in that world. Because in their world, the spread has a historical place that it goes to. It returns to that, at or near that, and you hold on until that happens. That's probably how they think of it.
Yeah.
So
they use an example here of Pepsi and Coke, two different companies that create a similar product, soda pop. Historically, the two companies have shared similar dips and highs depending upon the soda pop market. If the price of Coke were to go up a significant amount while Pepsi stayed the same, a pairs trader would buy Pepsi stock and sell Coca-Cola
yep.
stock, assuming that the two companies would later return to their historical balance point. If the price of Pepsi rose to close that gap in price, the trader would make money on the Pepsi stock, while if the price of Coca-Cola fell, he would make money on having shorted the Coca-Cola stock.
Right. So what it looks like, the perfect trade, because no matter what the market does, you end up with that return to normalcy. Mm-hmm. And that is a big strategy with a lot of people, professionals actually in will do that. But you have to trade that with a stop, because those historical norms can go away for quite some period of time. So just like, you know, we've talked about this before, bring me your most cleverest strategy, because the way they laid it out, no matter what the market does, you know, you make money. And the most cleverest strategy, no matter how complex it is, here's the problem, and it's just the fact of trading. You have to be right. It doesn't matter what it is, how good it is, that you have to be right. If you have an options strategy that has 16 different option legs on it, so that if this happens, that means I make money here, if that happens... No matter what it is, you still have to be right in order to make a dime out of the market. A penny, you have to be right. So there you are. So it's just another one of many, many strategies that has been around for a long, long time. But the interesting thing about the story was, first of all, that the guys that were the headlining guys in this company really did some great things. They really did come out with this Black-Scholes model. They really did win a Nobel Prize for it. It was a remarkable achievement given the complexity of the markets and so on. And they really did have success early on. And then
due to just not using stops. You know, I mean, I hate to categorize it just so simply, but they let positions go completely out of control, and then the whole thing blew up. So it's a very interesting story. Yeah, the movie, if you get a chance to see it, sit down, give yourself some alone time or whatever, or have your girlfriend or wife or whatever, but watch this movie. You'll really, it's a very, very well-done movie. Excellent. Just absolutely excellent.
There's a book that was called When Genius Failed, The Rise and Fall of Long-Term Capital Management.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the movie was perhaps made after the book. What year, how long ago was it that you saw the movie?
You know, I'm bad with time, strangely enough.
Plus
it was probably early in 2000s.
Okay.
You know, early in the early 2000s that I saw.
The book was published in 2000, it looks like.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on. Let's take a look around. There's a lot of volatility here. Check out that movie, though, if you get a chance. Even though I don't know the name of it, you can go to YouTube and maybe put in long-term capital, and you'll see some part of it. I think it's worth seeing, and I don't doubt that you will really enjoy it. Okay, so let's move on to the gold market. We've talked about gold many, many times on the program over the last month about the idea that gold is going to be bottoming in March. And along the way, they also put in a weekly bottom last week. This is confusing to people because the weekly bottom is actually in February. And we've talked about that that weekly bottom may end up the week of February 18th, may end up actually being the bottom for the March low that we're expecting. So in other words, it ends up coming 1 month early in February. And so we do this in reflected wave where we're looking for a shorter term time frame bottom inside a larger time frame bottom. As an example, maybe we are looking for a daily bottom tomorrow in something, and yet today they put in a very powerful, say, you know, 120 minute bottom, and they really hit some important levels and so on. Well, that would be an early sign to go long with the idea that the bottom's actually in. It's actually occurred one day early on the 120 bottom. See, and so that's kind of what may have happened in gold here. And yesterday we had messaged out to our institutional traders that if gold was able to get above 95 to 96, that would be a stronger position. And if they failed at 95 or 96, they would want to immediately go back down and test some important previous levels that we covered in the report. Well, if you take a look at gold today, they've certainly gotten above the 95 and 96 level, and that indicates higher prices still coming. So they're going to make they're going to attempt somewhat higher prices here, gold is, and then we're going to, we do have a top that would be due in gold tomorrow, which is February 27th. So that's Wednesday, February 27th for a top. And so that should be interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we get to it. But do consider the idea that we may have seen a early bottom, a February bottom in gold. And that's good for people who are long gold, obviously. And it also will allow people, once we have a pullback of some kind, to get long, because the advance that we're expecting off of a bottom like this, it would be certainly worth trading. So not really as a day trade, although you could make some money day trading it, but I'm talking about a more important multi-month move.
Trillion dollar bet. Does that sound familiar?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Trillion dollar bet.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
It apparently was released originally on PBS as the trillion-dollar bet, and then it was released by the BBC under the title The Midas Formula.
Ah, okay. So there you are. Well,
and
yeah, go check
YouTube,
that movie out.
Like, yeah.
You're gonna enjoy that. Okay, so if tomorrow, as an example, real quick on gold, if we do get higher, if we were to get up to 1628 to 1630, today we got up to 1619, if we were, that would be a starting point for me, and we'll wait and see. We're going to have, we have an institutional kind of report that goes out, and we'll talk a little bit about what we do. I can't give all the information out, but I can certainly be hopefully helpful to you. And as we get into March, this is, again, where a person could sell put premium. We've talked about this you know, and so on, to start a position and then later follow it up with futures. That would be one way to handle this. Okay. If there's no questions on that, let's move on to the U.S. Treasury bond market. We have been calling for a February bottom in this market. I'm quite confident that February is going to close well, and we will have what we originally forecast, which is a multi-month advance with the market ultimately testing 149 or higher. We're at 145 now, having achieved some earlier price targets for this advance.
Which market, David, are you on?
I'm sorry, which month or
which did market? You say?
The U.S. Treasury bond market, 30-year.
Oh, okay.
So we're looking for higher prices, and we think that the month of February will close well. And again, this bodes well for the interest rates. It'll keep interest rates low. I just want to say it again. I don't want to frighten people or, you know, upset people, but this advance, this multi-month advance that's about to occur, may be your last opportunity to take advantage of very, very low interest rates. The housing market has already started up. You know, back in 2012, we were talking about that the housing market had bottomed in 2011, and we're going to, you know, we won't see those lows for 50 years. I believe that will be proven correct over time. And if you don't need to have it even run 50 years to, obviously, to be able to do something with it. But the fact is that housing did advance powerfully this year, especially at least here in Las Vegas, and I know across the construction industry across the United States has been in a large number of states has been very, very strong. Certainly out here, go check out lumber futures and see where they are. Lumber's through the roof. And the reason it's through the roof is because builders are building homes, and that's a really good thing. So, but the housing prices have gone up, so the blue moon, half of the blue moon is kind of faded because the housing is starting to go up. You can still buy a house with absolute confidence that you're not buying a top. I promise you, you are not buying a top. Housing is going to go to at least $150 a square foot. And just a little while ago, it was in the 70s. Now it's up at 105, 110. It will be at $150 a square foot for new construction sooner than you think. So even if you were to buy today, tomorrow, next month, or the month after, you're buying prior to that $150 a square foot. That's kind of a general outlook, but that's where they're going, if not higher. So the reason I'm comfortable, with this is because the market has a lot more power in it than I think a lot of people might give it a credit for, and that's one of the reasons why even now people are surprised by what the market has been able to do.
So Kevin asks, are you expecting bonds to go up or down, and if so, how will that pair with the S&P?
Well, I'm expecting bonds to go higher for months. I'm expecting a multi-month advance to test, and this has been given out many times on the program, even when we were lower here, to get all the way up to 149 or higher. So that's the answer to the question. We expect bond market to go higher for months. But that higher business, that going higher, is not going to last forever. And we think that this advance may set the market up for the final deal where you're not basically going to be able to get those low interest rates. So just you know, I think you're fine if you're looking to take advantage of low interest rates all the way through August or maybe a little beyond. But at that point, we'll see where the market is at that time. Just a little friendly, you know, warning that we may and see the end of this. Now, what was the fellow who asked? Was that Eric?
No, that was Kevin.
Kevin. Okay, Kevin, I don't make those kinds of connections directly as you're making it. If the bond going up, then what does that mean for the S&P? I will look at the S&P and make my own determination for the S&P, and if the S&P closes this month below 1515, that's an early indication that there indeed is going to be a much larger decline potentially coming in the S&P, and that's what we talk about. I'm not overly concerned, and listen, other people use that methodology of measuring the markets. There's nothing wrong with it. I don't really make a big deal out of that. I look to the market itself to give me the indication, the individual market. I will say, having said that, that more recently I have watched the dollar and the euro, and because of their very tight connection, much tighter connection, I feel that I can do something with that. That it doesn't mean that I'm trading it directly, but it does help me in some ways to know that if I have a buy signal in the dollar, but I don't have a clear sell signal in the euro, that it tells me that the euro is very likely to go down even if I don't have a clear sell signal in the euro, where I do have a clear in the dollar, or the reverse of that, you know. So anyway, something for you all to consider is the issue about interest rates. So just keep an eye on that and try to take advantage of them, even if it's something as simple as getting the – remember, when you buy a car, everything is negotiable. Every last thing when you go in to buy a car is negotiable. In the lease, in the interest rate, in the anything and everything. When you buy a home, everything is negotiable. They'll say something to you, well, this has SIDS and LIDS. If those of you guys know what that is, it's these are bonds that every homeowner has to pay a certain amount. If you buy a house in an area where there's a SID or a LID, that means is that the county or the city has this company owes them money, and all the homeowners are going to pay a certain amount per year to pay the SID or the LID off. And you go, oh, okay, I see. And then so you just go in and do that. Well, that's also negotiable. You can have the builder go in and you can say, I'll buy your home, but I want you to take half of the SID. You go pay off half that SID and I'll buy your house. See, everything's negotiable. So especially with the interest rates being low right now, there's all kinds of wheeling and dealing that you can do. Having said all that, I just want to say it again, and I've been saying it for a while. Once housing goes up and once interest rates go up, the economy is going to do better, not worse. It actually will juice the economy in a number of different ways, I believe, with interest rates being higher. So the government's buying U.S. bonds. That's given us all a great little time to take advantage of low interest rates. But that actually, I think, is slowing the economy down. I think letting the market get back to its normal swings and not be buying $60 billion worth of 30-year treasuries will allow the market to do what it normally will do, perhaps. And then we get back to, I think, a better economy. So, okay, so the bigger picture on the S&P with regard to his question, Kevin's question is that once the top is in, and we believe a top is being put in, we believe this is the ending of a bull market, not the beginning of a new one, then we're looking for potentially a multi-year decline in the S&P. Okay, so we'll move on past the bond market, and we have a few others to touch on today. A lot of movement today. Pretty interesting volatility to be seeing here. So let's go past the bonds. The euro, as you know, for this whole month we've been calling, or even before, we've been calling for a February top in the euro. And we had an initial target from that top. By the time we were talking about it, we were in the 136 range. By the time we were giving it out as a trade, we were in the 135 range. We were talking about the market going down to 133.75 initially, and then a wild card target down substantially lower into March. And that wild card target was and remains at 129.73. The lowest low they've gotten is 130.20. So they've gotten within 40 some odd ticks of this target, which was really a 600 pip move. And we call it the wild card because there's every good indication that it's going to occur, but it doesn't quite rise to the occasion, so to speak, of a roadmap. So I list it as a wild card as highly probable, but still a very distant target. And some real money can be made on both roadmaps, longer-term types of setups, and these kind of a wild card kind of a setup. So anyway, we've come very close to it, and we believe that the market's going to continue lower into March. We are in the 1 month early for that bottom. I would like to see the 129.73 actually get touched. That'd be a nice completion, and it would also help us for the next trade, which is coming in the euro. So let's move over to crude real quick. I don't think I have to go over all the details, but just for fun, you know, we have a longer-term crude roadmap that we've talked about since December. Early December is when this thing started. So this is a really long-term deal and crude continues to confirm that. For those of you that are new, this is looking for the roadmap. Look for early December bottom at or near 85. Actually, the real number is like 84 and change, and then an advance to a top in January at $95 or higher. That's the first leg, and then a reversal off that January top for an initial move down to $88.70 or so, something like that. So that first leg down is underway right now. So where the market is right now at 92.52 is not the end of this move. It's going lower.
No, so, there's still, gosh, a lot of room down to, would you say, 88.70?
Well, 88.70 is the initial target. If you want the whole target, it's something that you might want to have to be a subscriber for, because we've given that out as
no,
a full
roadmap.
No, I was
just asking what you had just said. I was just trying
to the 88.70 to 89 and change area, right in that area, we still have a ways to go on the downside here. And my point is that I still like the short side of this market, and I think you can sell short at rallies for further decline in the crude oil market. So keep that in mind. And I just want to remind people that, oh, I don't know, it was right around January 30th, maybe very early February, that the TV was talking about how gas prices were going to keep going up higher and higher and higher. That's why I don't like to watch TV when I trade, because they are so wrong and they look so good being wrong that it gets you to do all the wrong things. Man, their hair is combed, they're all dressed up, they're pretty girls, they got the nice charts in the background, and they're just dead wrong. Just plain dead wrong. All of them. Idiots. All of them. They don't know a thing, and yet they're on TV telling you what's going to happen. And so just before this decline came, there they are on TV telling you it's going higher. What are you going to do when it goes higher? We're going to have to figure out a way to get it. Now the market's declining. That's how I know it's going a whole lot lower, because they're always really wrong. That's not how I make my forecast, but I could make forecasts just on what they say. Turn your TV off when you're trading, because they're going to tell you the exact opposite of whatever position you're in. You're long, they're going to say, yeah, the market's up 10 points, but it seems like it's up on nervousness about Europe. So, well, that means it's not going to stay up.
Gas prices have been going up.
Yeah, gas prices have been going up, and if there is a correlation, obviously, between gasoline prices and crude futures, but the stuff that they bought that's in the ground at the station right now isn't related to today's futures price. It was related to 6 months ago or a year ago when they had to order it and so on. So there's a delay and a lag there. But anyway, what I'm really discussing isn't whether or not gas prices are going up. I'm discussing the fact that the TV, when it's on, is going to give you – they're going to look really good telling you the wrong stuff. And they're going to tempt you to get out of a position that might be good and all that stuff. And many of you have seen this for yourselves. You're long the futures, and even though the market's up, the announcers are kind of, yeah, well, you know, on a day that you're short and the Dow's up 10 points, oh, the Dow's up big today. You know, well, why is it big today when I'm short and it's only up 10 points? But on the other day, what if I'm long and it's up 10 points? It's, well, in the Dow, you know, really, they can't really do much in the markets today. You know, they're up there saying, they're always on the wrong, you know, they make you feel like you're on the wrong side of the thing. Shut your TV off. That's rule number one for becoming a really good day trader, is shut your TV off, because they're going to tell you stuff that's not going to help you. How
well,
are you doing?
Well, and they typically have somebody to argue both sides. And so if you happen to walk in, you know, and you just catch, you know, the one side, then you might think, you know, well, that's how they feel. On most of these issues, they'll have somebody talk about both sides of it, so no matter which way it ends up going, you know, they have the opportunity to go, well, yeah, see, we got it. We had it. And then they'll play that soundbite over and over, where the guy was saying that it's going to do this or it's going to do that. And then the other soundbite, where the other guy said it was going to do the other thing, that kind of just, you know, they don't bring that up again. So, I mean, but that's just TV. That's just marketing. That's, you know.
No, I know, but the problem is it interferes with your trade, and it interferes with your head, and they'll just be saying it right at the right time just to finally get you to crumple.
Yeah.
And if anybody who's watched TV, I mean, everybody knows that that's the case. They're never telling you your position's right. you know, they're always making you nervous about your position, and you shouldn't be trading off of what the news says anyway. So, right? I mean, that can't be a good idea. Okay, so let's move on from there. We got a few other things. So anyway, so crude going lower. That's where we think crude is going, and you can get the full roadmap if you want it by signing up for PageTrader Messenger Pro. We have a new thing that's going to be in the Messenger Pro product soon that'll give you a lot more of this information before it's even out on the radio and stuff like that. So it'll really get a good chance to take good advantage of it. Today, real short term, the crude tried to advance some and they failed at some very short term important levels. So lower prices are coming in crude. So keep an eye on that. Other than that, we have a couple other markets I think are important. We're just watching it. We talk about it all the time. We're down to we're at 102.18 on the Aussie dollar. We got down to 101.84. As you know, our target has been 101.61 or 63, something like that, for 101.64 for a month or so. And so this month, you know, I'm not suggesting that somebody would have traded this because we've never forecast in this market before. So, but we were up at 104 when we started talking about this, and we're now down. We've gotten as low as 101.84, just 24 ticks off of this target. We believe this market's going to bottom in March. And so keep an eye on that. We'll talk about that. And the full indication will be given out in our reports and stuff like that. So keep an eye on that. We'll talk about it. Let's see. There's a couple last little markets I just wanted to mention real quick. I can't give out all the information I want to. You know I do because I want to be able to say, see, but I can't do it. But I did mention the other day that copper, you know, this is kind of a big boys market in the sense that you don't see a lot of day traders trading copper. But let me just say I kind of like it right now. Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing is we also have a daily reflected wave top due in the natural gas market on February 27th. It may have already occurred today. Now, this is a short-term top here, but the reason it's worth potentially considering for a short sale is because we never did get down to $2.98. I think they got down to $3.10 or something. That's not too bad, considering how high they came down from. But my preference would be to have seen a new low in February, which we were not able to make. So how they handle this decline is going to be very important, the decline off of the February 27th top. So keep that in mind. And I think, Dwayne, I think that's everything we can give out right now with regard to these markets. So, and if Robin was here, we could talk about soda and stuff like that. But other than that, you know, the S&P is banging into this 94 and 95 level we talked about earlier. Normally, this would be resistance. We'll see how the market handles it here. Generally speaking, like we said before, I think it's not an outright forecast, but I think we should get into the 74, 75 levels before this decline is over. So I'm viewing all these advances as potential selling territory at these critical levels.
Yeah, see, there we go. So this thing, it came, since we last looked at this and talked, it got up to, before it had only got up to 94. Now, in this last hour, since you and I were looking at this, it got up to 94.50. Remember I said I was waiting for it to come back to 95, 96, but I said, well, maybe 94 is as far as it's going to make it, but it actually looks like it wants to try to go to this 95, 96. So, again, for those of you that have been waiting on that trade and maybe you thought you missed it earlier or something, may have another opportunity here. Just let it consolidate a little bit. You don't have to nosedive into it because there's a good way to travel just to get to these swing lows, and then there's a lot of room below that. So, you know, let the market do what it needs to do here. You don't have to risk an inordinate amount. Let that consolidation take place, and your stop. If this trade's going to work out, your stop doesn't need to be any more than Well, I'm going to give you a very conservative number, 1498. That's a conservative number. So even if you get stopped out, well, that's fine. That's the purpose of stops, is so that you don't wreak financial havoc on your account. And if it turns around and goes back below 95, well, then you have to, as David's talked about a lot, sometimes you have to be willing to get back in. And that can lead you to thinking, well, yeah, but, now I'm paying too much in commissions and, I'm over trading. And so I'll fix it. I just won't use a stop. And then that won't happen again. That's a very perilous path of thinking. So please don't go down that path. Let yourself.
It's a short path, actually.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, just let yourself get stopped out if that's the case. I'm just saying that initially, if we're going to get a reaction from 95.96 and we're going back down to test these lows, wherever you get in, obviously the higher you get in, okay, the less you have to risk. But that stop for me. And now you may be different. Your risk profile may say that you risk 5 points on every trade or seven, whatever it is for you. I'm just saying for me, for the trade that we would use based off of the tweet that we'll put out for this trade, because we're doing it intraday, it'll only require about 2 points of risk. When it's overnight, typically there'll be a larger risk factor because we're actually calling the trade hours before it comes together. And so we don't know what the market's going to look like, and so that all has to be factored in. But when we're able to put out a tweet, as we did a couple last week during the radio program, we're able to manage that with a little tighter stop. So I'll put the information in the tweet when I send it out to you guys. So there you go.
Yeah. Just one last thing I was going to throw in on that, something that happens to people is that the market has a way of kind of training you how to act wrong. Like as an example, by using a stop and getting stopped out, it in a sense is training you to use a larger stop. And then if that gets hit, it then trains you to use even a larger stop. And at some point, it might even train you to not use a stop and say things like, I'm using a mental stop, which is like saying, I'm not saying anything at all.
Yeah.
Because a mental stop is utterly meaningless. It means nothing. It just means, here's what I'm using a mental stop means. It means when it goes through the price that would make me wrong, I'm going to look at it. That's all it means.
I'm going to wave as it
It's just
by.
Meaningless.
Yeah.
I'm going to be looking at the screen when it goes through a price that would make me wrong. That's my mental stop. So it has a way of training you to do the wrong thing. And in a way, if it's constantly hitting your stop, perhaps you have to adjust your methodology. But instead of adjusting your methodology, if you just constantly get your stops bigger and bigger, you'll ultimately go down the road where you say, well, I just don't use a stop, because they know where it is, and they're going to come and get it. So, and you know that that's just a bunch of nonsense. I mean, that's just a fairy tale. It doesn't matter if they know where it is. They just can't go and get it. The whole market is the whole market. It's a huge river, and a lot of other things have to happen in order for the market to go there. If it really was that easy that they could just go get it, then they would have all the money in the universe because they could do that all the time. But we end up believing in that because it sure looks that way sometimes, because we place an order and the market runs up to it and so on. But in that way, the market kind of trains you to do all the wrong things, and before you know it, the person that's training you to trade in the market is the person taking your money. That's not a good trainer. That's like the thief watching the fox guarding the den house, or whatever the old saying was, the hen house, whatever. You don't want the market teaching you how to deal with stops. You have to learn how to deal with it. You have to watch how important levels get treated and reacted from and all that stuff. But what happens is that you end up simply doing what the market wants you to do, and that's not a good way to trade. So you're going to have to figure some other way to get intelligence operating in your trading other than letting the market train you on how to do it. Because when it trains you how to manage your stops, you end up saying things like, I use a mental stop. And maybe you do. Maybe it really does mean something to you, and I don't mean to be too brutal about it, but it's very, very easy to slip from I use a mental stop into I just don't use a stop at all, and I just let the market, do whatever it does. I will tell you this. If I could get a check back for all of the money that my mental stop, cost me, Gosh, I'd have a really good day. Now, here's your check, Mr. Williams, for those mental stops. You know, it would be a pretty sizable amount of money. Enough money to, you know, start a real nice trading account with Bert Schlichter at Daniel's Trading. So, anyway, so Dwayne, yeah, they're working a little bit higher here. Thanks again for having me on the program. We'll see how the remainder of the week plays out here. We've got a lot of interesting things happening in a number of markets.
Did you look at Tesla today?
Let's go take a quick look. I actually did not.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick look at it. There was, by the way, just want to mention, you know, I guess I'm biased because I really love the electric cars. I love what Elon Musk did, and I don't want to just believe that some, you know, guy just – well, it turns out that another New York Times article person sort of did a critique on what the original journalist did, and she had some criticisms for him about the way that, you know, he handled certain things and the ways that he didn't report things. I don't think he was doing things purposely, though. I don't think the guy was – trying to, you know, mess with Elon Musk. And that's probably not a good guy to try to mess with, because he's a little bit perkier than, say, GM when the vote was being kicked around by Fox News, as an example. And I just want to say this about Fox News. Fair and balanced isn't what you were with the Chevy Volt. That's for darn sure. And the reason you weren't fair and balanced with the Chevy Volt is because it looked to you and it sounded to you, or maybe you just felt the public felt, that the Chevy Volt was an Obama administration creation, which it was not. It was developed in its entirety prior to the Obama administration. So they were kicking it around quite a bit, purposefully, to try to damage it, because it looked to them, because they really don't like Obama, and I don't blame them. But as a news organization, that isn't fair and balanced reporting. If I want commentary, I'll go to somebody's commentary column. But if you're going to put something up as news, then now you're crossing the line. So as much as I appreciate many of their positions and so on, they did a really, really huge hack job on the Volt, and they did a lot of damage. But in the end, the market won. The Chevy Volt's the best-selling electric car, and you know, they've done, you know, they're doing very well with it, and it's going to continue to do well, and so is GM, I hope. And I hope they pay their silly loan back in its entirety so they don't have the government on their back. Anyway, having said that, let's take a quick look at the Tesla stock, which we are down. And I think I mentioned yesterday that I think Tesla is going to bottom into next week, the week of March 4th. For those of you who would like to try to sell some premium, why not consider that into next week? We'll talk about it once the Tesla bottom is in. This is the kind of setup that we would do if you come to our we have, by the way, I do want to mention, we do have a webinar today on Reflected Wave, and we're going to show our latest statements as of just a few days ago, about 5-6 days ago. This statement is about a 22-month statement. It goes from April of 2011 till now. All trades are shown, win, lose, or draw. It's not hypothetical. It is actual trading with actual dollars. There is a difference between hypothetical and actual. And it's kind of like the difference between simulated trading and real trading. You know, there's a difference. There always is. There's a difference between the real thing and the conceptual thing in every case. But in this particular case, all we've been doing with this is buying or selling premium against reflected wave tops and bottoms of size. And that's essentially, we decided when we first started our seminars, which was in March of 2011, that was our first one, we started this account just to keep it running and show every single new time we did a webinar where we were, win, lose, or draw. And all we're doing, again, and we take our losses. There's no question about it. You'll see them in there. But over a 20-month period or 21 months, whatever it is, from April of last year, we've accumulated $212,000, real dollars in a real trading account, by selling time premium on individual stocks. And I want to show that to you today. Our webinar, and I've got a few other things I'm going to show as well. Our webinar is today at 1:30 Pacific time, 3:30 Chicago time, 4:30 Eastern time. And that means 15 minutes after the S&P closes. So you can come by and check that out. If, like I was saying with regard to Tesla, if next week you know, we have a bottom that's due there, that comes in, that's the kind of thing that we would sell time premium on for a multi-week advance, and then we would just book it, and we don't make a big deal out of it. So check that out. Also, one other thing we talked about the other day, Dwayne, and I'm sorry, you got me going on here, but I think I told you that we had sold some time premium already in Intel, based upon Intel, Intel Corporation also having a February 25th weekly bottom. That's the on-time week this week. And we had already begun a position, and I said on the radio, we started it, but I almost would prefer a little bit more time in it because I'm more conservative. But we did sell some, and Intel, thankfully, has reversed here on the on-time week. And this is just almost purely a time premium kind of or time decay kind of trade. We're not expecting a huge move. We may get one, but we are expecting some appreciation in price, meaning the stock goes up. And when that happens, the options will go in our favor, and we'll book them, and we may hold a few for further. And that's just going on in the background. You know, in the rest of your time, you could be doing any number of things in the markets. So, you know, or doing nothing for that matter. One of our clients and one of Bert's clients is a fellow that I know that does an enormous amount of this type of stuff, and he has found that it works very well for him. It does require somewhat larger margin requirements. And talk to Bert Schlichter, find out about it. Maybe we can do something with Tesla next week and see if that's something that interests everyone. It's a slower boat. You don't get paid that day, that immediately, and all that stuff. You just have to say, hey, this is something that I'm going to wait a few weeks for, probably before I see a payday. But you know what? There is a payday. It does happen. So give it some thought, and we'll continue taking a look at that as we get closer to it. So that, Dwayne, I think is the whole darn shooting match for us today. I'm going to put my gun back in the holster.
Alrighty.
There we go.
Very good. Right on out of town.
And right on out of town. You know, I think in your previous life, you probably were a cowboy.
You think?
I do.
It's possible.
Certainly. You know, if you believe in that, you know, previous life stuff, you know, I don't know if I do, but if there is a previous life, I think you were a cowboy.
Yeah, I don't. Okay. All right.
Well, I think I was an aphid. That's a bug.
I know.
My last. All right. Well, anyway, so thanks for having me on. Okay. Anything else, Dwayne, or are we out of here?
No, I'm done, man. Market's really kind of quiet here at this 95, yeah. 96. So, guys, you know, got to figure out, if you're going to trade this thing, figure out, you know, you got plenty of time to sit down and figure out what you're going to do, plan your trade, and then trade your plan. I mean, this isn't a fast market. You don't have to make any snap decisions. It could be as simple as that little trend line I just drew. If you have questions, if you would like to be in this trade, call Bert, toll free, 866-928-3310. He's licensed to dispense advice, and he would probably give you some pretty good ideas. So do that.
Mm-hmm. And he's not licensed to dispense medication, however.
No,
so
only advice.
Just ask him about trading.
Yes. And David, yep. You have a great afternoon.
Thank you very much, Wayne, for having me on. I appreciate it. And thank you for the questions as well. And I look forward to being here tomorrow with you and Robin and the whole crew.
I'll see you then.
Okay, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
See you then.
Okay, guys, that is going to do it here for us on this end as well. There's the link in the chat box if you want to go to the webinar that David's having today. Other than that, I don't see any questions. The market is quiet. Here we've got price hitting the weekly trading zone at 95.96. Let's turn on our dynamic support and resistance and see what that has to say about this. Ah, see that? I didn't know that was lurking right there, but it is. Okay, so we had dynamic support all across here. We hit fixed resistance, weekly trading zone. Now remember what I said earlier, these little dotted lines, the weekly trading zones that go out to the partners before the market opens every Monday. And once they go out, they're cast in stone, they do not change. The dynamic support and resistance, that changes by the hour, by the minute, depending upon the time frame you're using the indicator on. Okay, if you're using it on a one-minute chart, it can change moment by moment. In fact, I'll show it to you on a one-minute chart here in a second just to give you an idea. Now, the dynamic, okay, we got fixed. That's based on the past. The fixed is on the past. The dynamic, the red dot that appeared, okay, that's based on what's happening right now. Okay. So when you have those two things come together, I talked about this earlier, when those two things come together, the fixed and the dynamic, that's pretty powerful. It's really a good signal. Because the way the weekly trading zone is formulated and calculated versus the way the dynamic is calculated, the two couldn't be further apart. I mean, they're looking at completely different things in a completely different way. So when they actually look at each other and both shake their head and agree that that's a good area for resistance, typically it will be. You know, not always. Okay, there's no holy grail, no 100%. Price could blow right through that thing. But the probability is, the higher probability is that it won't blow through it. Okay? Well, does that mean I should just get short now? Well, no. I didn't say that. You could, because again, I don't think you need to risk more than 1498. If price goes above 98, then the trade's probably headed, you know, higher. The market's probably headed higher. So you don't want to be stuck in a trade going one way when the market's going the other way. So I would just let it come up here. Maybe it's going to tap this dynamic resistance. Maybe it's going to spike it a little bit. See, the market's climbing right now. There's an old saying, you never sell a green candle. Never buy a red candle. Okay, now you can ponder that and you get into different time frames. Well, yeah, but is that on a 10-minute or is that on an hourly or, you know, okay. Point is we're looking at an hourly chart right now. So based on that thing, you would wait until you see a red candle building and get in. But you can go to a smaller time frame. Once this thing gets up here, okay, let me just show you right here on a 4-tick range. Go to a 4-tick range chart, the ES. Okay, this is that weekly zone we're up against right here, 95, 96. Okay, so notice the trade that made itself available on the way up. Okay. We had the bullish cross. We had the pullback. We had a nice move. We had another pullback. You know, you could draw a little trend line there. Another nice move. There's probably three trades on the way up to the zone here on the ES. Or one trade if you just got in it and stayed in it. If you were just looking to take a couple points, then maybe there was three trades. But that's not even my point. My point is, we were looking at the hourly chart, and I made the comment about, you know, you never sell a green candle. Okay, this candle may be green over here. Now, in order for this candle to turn red, I want you to understand what has to happen. See, the candle opened 1493. So price would have to trade all the way down to 92.75 before this candle can flash red. I'll say that again. This hourly candle opened at a price of 14.93. In order for this candle to turn red, price would have to trade back down to 92.75. Well, that precludes you from getting short up here in the zone. Remember, the higher up you are when you take the short position, the less you have to risk. Because if you're going to put a stop at 14.98, you're going to put a stop at 98, which would be right there. You know, that's a little tight, but you can see if it spikes just even a little bit, you know, you might have to go, Yeah, I thought 98 would do it. Maybe we need to consider 99. Even that's still kind of tight. Okay, but here's how we get away from that. See, you don't have to, let's leave it at 98, just like I said originally, and I'll tell you why. Because you don't have to trade this. You don't have to take this trade as price is climbing, okay? Let it get rejected and take your trade on the way back out, okay? Now, so you got green candle here. Go back to the four tick range. We're hitting this resistance. See, you'll get a red candle over here long before you get a red candle on the hourly chart. So this thing could start to turn right here. You could draw a trend line just right across these bottoms here. Yeah, that puts you kind of far out. I don't like that. Let's just go from this last swing low right here. You get the picture. Okay. Wait until you get something here that you can draw a trend line across. You need to have two bottoms that you can connect. So let it do whatever it's going to do here in the zone. Now, if it spends a lot of time consolidating in the zone, going sideways, then you could get a perfect entry coming out. If it doesn't spend a lot of time consolidating, if it just gets rejected, then by the time you get your bearish cross and your pullback and all of that, you may be more like, it may have gotten over into this area here. And that's okay. That's not a problem because, remember, the swing low that we're looking at for the initial target is down here around 14. It's the swing low of this candle. 86 and a quarter. Okay. 14.86 and a quarter is the swing low right here. Over here is 81.75. Okay. So if you're not able to get short until down into here, that's okay. There's still plenty of room to run down to the swing low. And remember, if the swing low gets taken out, then we're looking at a much deeper target down about another 10 points or so. 10 points plus. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I'm reading your question here, Don. You'll be going to Arkansas, so it's around 12 Central when I'm setting up. Is that okay? Yeah, that's okay. Okay. All right. Okay. So we know what we're looking for. We're looking for price to test resistance, both the fixed and the dynamic, and then for it to reverse. How you get into the trade is going to be up to you, whatever time frame you like. If you like the hourly, then you can simply wait for this thing to break the trend line. And when it breaks the trend line, you might say, well, you know what, I want to see it close below the trend line. Okay. Let's say that this is the high candle, then you get another candle that breaks it. You might say, well, I'm going to trade a break of the low of the swing high. Right there. You could do that. That's one way of doing it. You can simply use your four-tick range chart for the for that trade that we do over and over and over in the live trading room every day. You can just wait for that whole thing to set up over here. Now you're getting into a trade based on the four-tick range, which means you only have to risk 2 points with the idea of on this particular trade, because of the nature of the setup, that you could possibly push your target farther out than 2 points. Because if we're rejected here, the high probability is that we will go back to test this swing low. And if these lows are broken and held on a pullback, then the chance that we'll go down to test our lowest weekly trading zone is very good. All of that gets negated if we break and hold above the dynamic resistance. That's why I say just wait, be patient. This isn't a fast-moving market. You don't have to be concerned about, you know, rushing into anything, making any kind of a snap decision. Just wait and let the trade set up. Okay. If you're a partner, if you're on the trial, you've got the tools, the four-tick range, you've got everything you need, just watch it. And when it whispers to you, now, you'll know. If you don't know, call Bert. He'll help you. 866-928-3310. Okay, is there any final questions? The trend change video, Jeanette, I showed everybody yesterday where it was in the partners area. If you go down to in the partners area, go down to Steve Bigelow, the webinar we did with him. There's a video there. And as I recall, it was just right below that. It's called the Trend Change Indicator video. It tells you how to do all your settings. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just go into the members area. Scroll all the way down below all the workshops, which there's 99 now this Thursday. May be our 100th Partners Workshop. We're giving away an iPad Mini. So if you're on the trial and you want a chance to win that iPad Mini, you got to be a partner to get in the meeting. Okay, so you've still got today to evaluate and tomorrow to evaluate and even, you know, Thursday morning. You just have to be a partner by Thursday evening so that you can be in the partners meeting in the workshop to qualify to win the iPad Mini. Okay, Kevin says, I'm new to Twitter. Is there a way to have it on the desktop, or how's the best way to keep up? Really, the best thing you can do, Kevin, is to download on the homepage of CFRN, the right-hand side, down towards the bottom. There is, I showed this yesterday. I can show it again today. There's a million different apps for, you know, Twitter. You can get, there's all kind of third-party apps that'll display it in your browser, do different things. One way you can do it is if you install our toolbar, which is built in conjunction with Amazon, that Amazon, Jeff Bezos, the whole crowd. Your antivirus software will caution you, hey, you're installing something that could potentially be harmful. Are you sure you know what you're doing? Are you sure you want to do it? You have my word and Jeff Bezos' word, the CEO of Amazon, that the toolbar will not harm your computer in any way whatsoever. There's no adware, malware, badware, or spamware. It's all goodware. Now, what happens is once you install the toolbar, Chrome, Firefox, Internet Explorer works on all three of the major browsers, not on Safari, though. Once you do that, okay, you'll get a toolbar up across the top right here, and you'll always have access to our most recent tweets. You'll be able to tweet yourself, do your Facebooking, listen to podcasts, listen to the radio, which streams 24/7. You can drop this down, read our daily newspaper, check us out on Google Plus, Seeking Alpha, Daily Audio Bible, Daily Economic Reports, chock full of stuff built and designed just for you. So in answer to your question, Kevin, that's one way that you can have the tweets at your fingertips, okay? Now, I've got to figure out, I am going to tweet this trade out. I just haven't figured out how I'm going to what I'm going to use as my trigger. You know, that's not a bad trigger right there. The swing low, because I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, this thing may keep going up. It may go sideways for a while. So the swing low there is 92. Consider being short below. Unless I change my mind between now and when I actually type it in. That's probably what it'll say, and it'll be just that simple. Consider being short below 91.50. So what am I saying? I'm saying I want price to get rejected. Okay, that has to happen first. Price has to be rejected. If it keeps going, I certainly don't want to be short. Oh, look, it's going to test that dynamic resistance right now. This is kind of a telling moment as to whether or not we're going to have a short trade. Okay, it's testing dynamic resistance in real time at fixed resistance. So, if we get rejected, the swing low of this candle is 92. So what I'm saying is I would like to be short the market 91.50. That's just a real basic, simple, easy trade setup. Now, for those of you who are CFRN partners and you have the four tick range chart and the indicators that go along with that, you can trade it that way. You can wait for the trade to set up on the short side, simply knowing in the back of your mind that you're going to look for potentially a, you know, deeper target. You don't have to. You can just take your 2 points and call it a day. But this is a situation where you know there's a kind of a good argument for using a bigger target. We never increase our stop. And we reduce our stop as quickly as we can. But there are times when the market, the way it's laid out, allows you to increase your target more than 2 points. And when that happens, no reason not to take advantage of it if you want to. If you don't want to, you don't have to. Okay, Iris says, if you go through the red dots, will there be other appearing above it? Other red dots? No. What will happen is if we break dynamic resistance, the way this algorithm works is it will then have to print support. So if the red dots are broken, the next thing you'll see print are green dots. Okay, once the red's been printed, that's it. That's where this formula sees resistance. If that turns out to not be, well, it's already shown us that it was resistance once. I mean, it came up here and hit 97 and a quarter and sold off all the way down to 82 and a quarter. So, I mean, it's done its job once already. The question is this still resistance? Or has the dynamics of the market changed? Well, we're getting an opportunity to find out. So, if the market trades higher, before you see any more red dots up here, you're going to see green dots first. In other words, it'll make a run. Let's say it broke out right now and made a run to 15, 10, 11. Stopped dead in its tracks. You would not see any red dots. As it pulled back, at some point, you would start to see some green dots. Once the green dots print support and it starts to move higher again, now the stage is set for the next appearance of dynamic resistance. That's how it will always print. Resistance, support, resistance, support, resistance, support. It will always do that back and forth. Okay. All right. So we got a little bit of rejection there initially so far. Okay. After watching it on the four tick range, you can see the cycle's red. It's hooked down up here in the CFMA1. Got a little bit of red going on, but we're still inside of the zone itself. I poked out for two candles on the four tick range, and now it's back inside. Again, no rush, no need to be in a hurry. This is not a fast moving market. Take your time. This 91.50 idea may not coincide with the setup that you get on the four tick range. So I won't be here. I'll be away from my desk. But if this thing gets turned around and gives you a setup on the short side, if you're going to trade the four tick range, you have to take that 91.50 number kind of out of your head and just go with this setup if that's what you're going to go with. You can do one or the other. Either trade the four tick trade to the short side, the four tick range, take that setup to the short side with a potential target, you know, at that swing low that we said showed on the hourly. Or if you don't have those tools to take the four tick range, then you can use this idea, which I will put out as a tweet, to consider being short below 91.50. Okay? All right. Don asks, is the dynamic support and resistance good for all markets and all time frames? It is, Don. It works really well across multiple markets, multiple time frames. In fact, we can go look at, let's go to the ESH3. And let's see, insert, indicators, CFRN, CFSR. Okay, now see here on a 5-minute, see support held, but over on a 5-minute chart, resistance, it broke through. Let's look at it on a 1-minute. See, on the 1-minute, it's running into that same resistance that we're finding, or close to it, that we're finding on the hourly. The larger the time frame, the more important that dynamic support and resistance is. Fixed support and resistance, that's constant across all time frames. But the larger the time frame that you see these dots appear in, like this is an hourly, that's going to take precedence over a 1-minute or a 5-minute. You know, what if we run this out to a daily? What do we have then? Go to a daily chart. Okay, we talked about this the other day. We broke dynamic resistance on a daily chart back in December. It held on a pullback. We've been running ever since. All of 2013, we don't have one dynamic support dot yet. We're waiting on it. We're looking for it. We don't have it yet. Okay. Barbara asks, will your toolbar replace my toolbar or be in addition to it? It will be in addition to it. It'll just go right below it. Whatever you already have up there, you'll still have the same one. Okay, Jeanette, so you got logged in? Okay, good. All right. And Don, I answered your question. Okay. All right, I'm going to leave the hourly chart up so you guys can watch that. I'll put that tweet out because I said I would. And it looks like, you know, that may turn out to be a trade. Always use a stop, no matter how good it looks. Always use a stop. All right, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with his mercy and with his grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard, and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.